Last year, Adam and I and a few hundred friends of DeSoto gathered in the Masonic Lodge inside a cemetery in the heart of Hollywood. Were we there to practice some dark rite? Some sinister ritual designed to bring deceased Star Trek actors back to the plane of the living? To bring an unholy horde of undead nerd celebrities to Earth to consume the brains of the living? No, we were just doing our live show of the Share Your Embarrassment Tour. It's our review of Star Trek V, and we filmed it. We just wanted to let you know to get ready for that live stream announcement coming next week. If you're a Max Fun member and you support our shows, you'll get access to discounted tickets from membership at MaximumFun.org. So, good time to make sure those emails are delivering properly to your inbox. Either way, we'll be announcing ticket links soon here and on our mailing list that you can sign up for at podshop.biz. The Share Your Embarrassment Tour is coming to your living room for one last stop, and you're not going to want to miss it.
Here's to the finest crew in Starfleet. Engage.
Welcome to The Greatest Generation, a Star Trek podcast by two guys who are a little bit embarrassed to be doing a Star Trek podcast. I'm Ben Harrison.
I'm Adam Pranica. Did you say Star Shrek? You really
Space.
Bulldozed the title.
The final frontier. These are the voyages.
Welcome to Star Trek Impression Cast. Your twice weekly 40 minutes of hacky impressions. I'm your host, Adam Pranica.
Desperately hacky and unoriginal and you, I mean, not only unoriginal, but bad versions of unoriginal impressions.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like an impression of an impression of an impression kind of impressions.
Just gross.
Yeah. Sorry. Sorry to everybody that listens that doesn't like it when we break into Picosby or Trump Picard.
I think they're long gone. I think anyone who isn't into our impressions left after the second episode.
Yeah.
At the time of this recording, the new movie is sort of on the horizon, Ben.
Yeah. A few people have even tweeted me and said, like, what do you think of the new movie? And I've been like, I don't know. Is it out? I don't know. And they're like, oh, I thought you would have, like, had some sort of in. And, That's not how this podcast works. We are not in with the cool kids that get to go see things before they're out.
Well, let me tell you how this podcast works.
We're
Ben.
Firmly on the outside.
I think you might already be clear on this. You and I do about as little work as possible, and our listeners do things like bombard a Twitter feed on our behalf, or they'll set up Facebook and Reddit pages for us. They would probably also be the most likely to get a screener.
Somebody made an Argyle Shimoda bumper sticker mock-up, like a presidential campaign with Argyle and Shimoda on the ticket.
They've got my vote.
Yeah.
Do you think Shimoda as vice president would be more or less fun than Joe Biden right now? Because I love Joe Biden, just as a person, he's the greatest.
He's definitely the drunk Shimoda of the current government.
Yep.
Even though he's a teetotaler.
Mm-hmm.
I read a New Yorker profile in Joe Biden one time, and it said that the plane that he flies around, which is like the hoopty version of Air Force One.
It is, yeah.
He has a little office on it, but there's no seat for somebody that wants to come in and sit and talk to him. There's just a cooler. You have to pull out from under the desk to sit on.
That is amazing.
Isn't that the most Joe Biden-y fact you've ever heard?
That story reads like an Onion article. It's perfect. He's got coolest cooler under his desk.
Yeah, you don't want to sit on the blender function.
No. No, that's for personal use only. Got a hell of an episode we're reviewing this time, Ben. It's season 3, episode 3, Who Watches the Watchers? And I might have steamrolled whatever bit you wanted to do before the show.
I don't think I had anything. Okay. I don't think I had anything chambered. If I did, I've forgotten it. I'm pretty heavily hopped up on Dayquil right now.
Tell me about that.
Getting over some stuff, but...
You sound great.
Oh, yeah. Well, I drifted in and out of consciousness as I watched my two episodes to prepare for the show we are currently recording.
Oh, you sound like what I've been accused of as recently as today. Someone accused me on our Facebook page of not really paying attention to the show.
Yeah, I feel like the last couple of episodes we've had some kind of glaring plot, misstatements of how the plot went, and people have kind of taken shots at us over that. We're giving a sense of the plot so that we can joke about stuff while we do that. That's the premise of the show.
It's not an academic summary of it, that's for sure.
Yeah.
I thought we had done a pretty good job setting up that expectation, but I guess not.
Yeah. So the Enterprise is heading to help some anthropologists with a reactor, and Chip is kind of moving at high speed, and Geordi comes up to the bridge and he's like, "We've got everything that they need. I just don't understand why they need so much power." He sort of deducts that they are using this generator to power a duck blind, is what he calls it, which is a fun Federation term of art for using holograms to conceal the fact that
They're going to murder the things that they're out there watching.
Some scientists have set up a sneaky little observatory where they can surreptitiously watch a sort of pre-modern group of proto-Vulcans called Mentakans.
We should really talk about what these proto-Vulcans look like, Ben, because we have referred to Unfrozen Caveman Lawyer before.
Sometimes the honking horns of your traffic make me want to get out of my BMW and run off into the hills or whatever.
But these Vulcans look like Frankensteins.
They have the wig that Unfrozen Caveman Lawyer has, for sure.
Yeah.
But just cut with like a real severe bang.
Yeah.
To sell that they are Vulcans.
Yeah.
The back of it's real mullety, though.
Yeah, they've got some real like Timmy from South Park head. Like sort of a triangular head. I'd like modern modern Vulcans don't look like that. They've got, I feel like, a pretty standard head size, right?
Well, they're keeping it trim in the back as well as the front. These guys are business in the front, but they're fully party in the back.
Yeah. Yeah, and when you're living in the Iron Age or whatever, access to clippers probably isn't a thing you've got.
Right, and they've got a little bit heavier of a brow, I would say, than your average Mr. Spock.
Yeah, they got a little bit of Cro-Magnon brow.
Yeah. So
they sort of look like Far Side characters, like the like the Far Side cavemen.
Yeah. I don't know if you saw this, but Gary Larson is credited as a consulting producer on this episode.
Perfect.
So yeah, this observatory is having some power problems, and while they're on FaceTime with the observatory gets a banger, and it's one of those perfect Star Trek industrial accidents that knocks everybody in the room out without killing anyone. But one of the guys manages to slip out the window when he gets hit with the lightning bolt.
It's totally like an unnecessary spaghetti western scene where a guy like a guy's on a roof and he gets shot and he doesn't need to do a forward flip into the hay bale, but he does anyway.
Right, and like a little unclear why they wouldn't also have a pane of glass on that window.
Sure.
But or even better, transparent aluminum on that window.
Yeah, but, I don't think that's an OSHA-approved workplace, for sure.
No, for sure not. Because also, like, when it starts to go electric, that electricity is arcing all over the place, and every metal surface picks it up. Like, They need some fiberglass in between those metal pieces to serve as damping barriers.
If you're a continuity nerd, I think I think you'll notice that this is the same electricity that zapped Worf early in season one.
Definitely.
Looks very similar.
Same stuff.
Yeah.
That electricity hasn't gotten any work for an entire season, but, you know, its agent got it back in the show.
That electricity finally paid its union dues.
So this guy goes out the window as a couple of Mintakans are out doing some timekeeping. They're fixing up the sundial, which is way better looking than our Earth sundials. You know, it's got like hoops and and rings, and they've got to adjust many things on this thing.
It's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
And these two are like our main characters. This is Liko and his daughter Oji.
Yeah. And they're sort of I feel like they're also, I'm not sure if they cast people of First Nations descent, but they sort of play them a little bit like kind of a split between like peasant people in terms of the costuming, but like, you know, like European peasant people in terms of costume, but sort of American Indian in terms of their coloring and like belief system that they suddenly revert to, spoiler alert. And
sure, but and I that. Mean, but like Ray Wise is Liko, and he's about the whitest guy that there is.
Yeah, but they put some darker base makeup on his face than he would typically take.
Yeah. You know what's interesting is Pamela Adlon plays OG.
Oh shit, is that Pam Adlon?
Fuck yeah. And no she way. She is no less hot when she looks like Frankenstein. Like it fucking yeah. works.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's wow. fantastic.
Pam Adlon is a solid A+
yeah.
in my book.
She might be too big for Greatest Gen Con 2017.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll try to reach out. I mean, I feel like the panel would be a lot classier with a Pam Adlon on it.
Look, Pam, we can't afford to fly you up to Fresno, but I've got a buddy with a car, like a 1992 Nissan Sentra. We'll be happy to drive you up there.
I just picture the
LA to Fresno is like 7 hours, right?
Yeah, oof. I just picture us in a single room at the Red Roof Inn in Fresno, and just some random weekend in 2017, just each one sitting on the edge of a queen bed facing each other, going like, "You want to watch an episode or something?"
It's not the first time we've been in a strange bedroom together watching a Star Trek episode and then recording an episode of our show.
Yeah,
sadly, that's something that we've done before.
I think that's what Greatest Gen Con is going to shape up to look like.
Yeah.
I had a really diabolical idea for what would happen with our show when we're done with the show, by the way.
It was my understanding that this show would never end.
I was thinking, what if we just go back to the beginning?
Oh, man. During our clip show, we had to listen to a lot of those early episodes. And let me tell you, man, I would be in for re-recording a couple of those, that's for sure.
What if we did this? What if we just started reviewing our own show? It just becomes the most disgustingly meta podcast of all time.
I was thinking we'd do Gosheven-style overdubs with, like, different voices, like hand-picked voice actors.
Yeah. Oh, God. Anyways, back on track. So the banger hits, and on the bridge of the Enterprise, Data turns around and says, like, we could be there in 23 minutes if we speed up. And Picard goes, speed up, and then the banger hits, and Picard says, like, step on it, let's go warp 9.
Mm-hmm.
And it made me wonder why we ever go anything less than warp 9.
I know. I was like, thinking the same thing.
Why would you be going warp 7 if warp 9 is available? Like, what does it use up?
I don't know.
deuterium?
I said I don't know, okay?
Adam, I need you to clarify some stuff, okay? So they get there, and they get down to the facility, and so there's three researchers there, and two of them are in there, passed out, assed out, and the other one that fell out the window is missing.
Yeah, who's in our Dustbuster Club, though?
We got Riker, we got Data, we got Geordi, and
Dr. Crusher. Yep.
No Worf this time, right?
No.
Because they're just in the facility, like nothing to be worried about.
Yeah. If anyone's got a head to match what's going on down there, it's probably Worf.
Yeah. But so they get it safe. They get the power turned back on. But before they get the hologram back up and running, Leeko pokes his head in the window. And it's I think like my favorite unintentionally funny kind of shot that is in many, many TV shows and movies is a character looking through a window. Like it always makes me laugh to just see a character like look, just like poke their head through a window.
Yeah.
And this is real funny also because Data notices him, and instead of like greeting him or, you know, trying to get him in a Vulcan neck pinch or something, he just turns and goes, "Commander." And Leeko like flips out, puts his hand on the metal wall of the window, and it shocks him, and he falls down the hill, and he himself passes out. So they run out there. OG sees all this go down from a hiding place.
Before we continue, I want to tie something up to... So Leeko falls off the cliff. There are a couple of Wilhelm scream moments in the show. Everyone's falling off cliffs.
Yeah.
It's great.
And OG sees the doctor run out and beam up with her dad. And this is a real head fuck for somebody that lives in the technological context that she lives in.
Right.
It is a guiding principle of a Starfleet base. Have you not find it within yourself to stand up, tell the truth? You don't deserve to wear that uniform.
This is a big problem because this whole duck blind situation is meant to enable them to observe these people without causing any prime directive problems. And they've basically doubled down on the prime directive being broken. When Dr. Crusher gets back to the ship, Picard basically tears her a new one because she's brought a primitive on board who should never have been even aware of the duck blind, much less going on a starship. And so she agrees to wipe out his short-term memory using Pulaski's technique, which is the first and maybe last time Pulaski is ever mentioned in the post-Pulaski era.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, her case is interesting because the way she puts it is, it's sort of like lying to cover up a lie, to cover up a lie. Like, they keep hurting by helping, is what I mean.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's like a series of well-intentioned actions that just snowball into a totally crazy, like, unbelievable prime directive violation that is 100% off the rails before they're even willing to admit it to themselves. Like,
right.
Like they think that they're going to wipe this guy's memory, but they still have a guy missing on the planet's surface, and there's like a good chance that he's still alive because they can't find his signal, which means he probably ran into a cave or something.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're like, Picard is not showing how deep in shit they are by raising his hand up to his eyeballs, but like they're that deep. And I think that it's interesting that they don't really admit it to themselves at this point.
Well, they have one of those, like, meeting of the gods, McLaughlin groups in the conference room.
Issue one!
Where they go over what exactly they can do now. And it is so godlike to hear what their options are. And in the end, Riker has a very interesting idea for how they might find the missing person.
Well, we should talk about the discussion, though, because Picard is being told by the lead researcher that what they should do is just... like provide a 10 commandments to the Mentakans and bounce.
Right. Right.
Which is a stupendously alarming idea. Like he says, without these 10 commandments, it'll just be nothing but Spanish Inquisitions.
Nobody expects the Spanish Inquisition!
That is the most interesting part of this episode, is like thinking about whether them injecting a little bit of their own morality would actually be a positive situation in this prime directive violation or not. Like, it definitely, like, I'm very publicly anti-prime directive, and I think that,
I think everyone here knows that.
The prime directive is a Chinese hoax. Everybody should be aware that the Chinese have been beating us over the head with this prime directive thing for years.
It's the chemtrails of the Federation.
Yeah, well, but like, but that's, this is a case in point, right? Like, if they drop off some Federation morality, like, can they actually trust that it would get practiced? Or are they stuck monitoring and sculpting this culture for the rest of history?
Yeah, I think one of the great points that's brought up in the room is religion for its own sake is fairly benign, but religion easily becomes warped into things that turn into death for a lot of people.
They abandoned their belief in the supernatural. Now you are asking me to sabotage that achievement, to send them back into the dark ages of superstition and ignorance and fear? No!
Right, but I'm not sure why the anthropologist is so sure that their ginned up religion that they would just leave on the doorstep before they split would be impervious to multiple interpretations, you know?
He's been watching these Frankensteins for a while. I probably trust his judgment.
Okay, fair enough, Adam.
This is becoming a speech.
You're the captain, sir. You're entitled.
Not entitled to ramble on about something everyone knows.
So the plan is hatched that Riker and Troy are going to go down and look around, see if they can find this guy that's still missing.
So yeah, they get made up to look like proto-Vulcans, including the headpiece and the clothing. And this is once again a great opportunity for Riker to sport the open V, which goes all the way down again.
You're going to put that thing on and parade around like one of them?
Riker is in the latest of summer trends. He's got the deep V, he's got cut-off shorts, he's got knee-high boots. Got a fun satchel slung over one shoulder.
Yeah.
He is looking ready for fun in the sun.
He's got that heat wave Williamsburg bartender look.
And Troy is basically in like a form-fitting burlap sack. Like, she is in the heaviest looking floor-length dress.
She's looking pretty dumpy.
I don't think it's dumpy. It's just, it's hella conservative. And for a society that is matriarchal in the way that she describes.
Yeah.
A little bit strange as a choice on the costume department's part.
Yeah. Is this a good time to discuss the kind of Depeche Mode score that they drop in every time they're down on the planet surface?
I can't think of a better time.
It is really synthy and weird. Like, I don't know if it's Ron Moore's situation here. I should probably look that up before I start talking shit. But it sounds really different from any other episode we've seen this season, certainly. Like, sort of a throwback to season one, Cynthia.
Yeah, I didn't pick up on that, but in my defense, I was probably...
You were pretty gacked on Dayquil.
Yeah. I was not in my right mind when I watched this episode.
God, but Ben even pay attention to these episodes?
Speaking of people who are not in their right minds, Liko has been fixed up and gets back to his village, and he and his daughter start talking about the experience he's remembering from the Enterprise, which we becomes very apparent very quickly that Crusher is no Pulaski when it comes to memory wiping. He remembers everything, and he has interpreted his memory of Picard as being of meeting God, because Picard was in charge and was looking for this missing guy, and so Liko comes back, and through just a kind of jaw-dropping series of logical leaps has got the whole village believing in their ancient religion anew, and the appearance of Riker and Troi to sort of like dispel this virus of spreading religion is no good, because just then two of the cavemaniest of cavemen show up with Palmer, the missing scientist, slung over their shoulders.
Yeah, it's not a good look. Especially because that's the moment that Riker and Troi have infiltrated the camp.
I felt like Troi and Riker didn't really put their thinking caps on with this. Like, they realized that the Prime Directive violation is... They're the first ones to realize, like, how deep the shit they are in is. And they just kind of keep letting a logical fallacy fly by without debunking it, you know? Like, they keep... Like, when Liko will say, oh, you know, we found Palmer, the Picard will be happy with us. He maybe can bring back my dead wife. They don't go, like, what gives you the sense that the Picard has any awareness of you or interest in you? Like, you know, it's the same thing when people insist that they, that, you know, in their religious conviction in a, you know, public political way, it's like, how are you so certain that you know what God thinks? Like, when there are other people of the same religion that disagree with you, like, how did you get so convicted in that? And he is convicted in thinking he knows what Picard wants as soon as he is convicted in thinking that Picard is God.
Right, right. Like, it could be that Riker feels that way about it. Like, how are you going to talk sense to a religious fundamentalist? You can't. So, like, he's got to think of a plan B pretty fast. Like, talking this guy out of his thinking is probably hopeless.
Yeah, well, especially when he looks so dumb.
Riker's been on this planet for all of 10 minutes and he hasn't fucked anyone.
Yeah, he's a little out of sorts.
This,
you know?
Field trip is a failure. They're getting some super great mileage out of this Ensigns of Command playset, though.
Yeah, oh, you think that's the same walls but repurposed?
I think so. It sure looks like it.
That's interesting. It felt different to me, but you might be right. It might just be like lit really differently.
Yeah, you throw some hay around.
Yeah, trowel on a little extra stucco to make it look more rustic.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, you might be right. Picard orders Riker to do everything in his power to get Palmer, the missing scientist, back up onto the ship. And the way they do this is Troi provides a distraction by saying that she sees another scientist out in the countryside. Every single person but the old man runs out to help her track this fictional person down, and Riker stays behind and ties the old man up and runs out with the beat up scientist, who is like...
Riker's tied people up by the wrists a bunch. Yeah, like, he's really great at that.
He knows some knots. He knows some safe words. So he's like running away with Palmer, and OG like circles back to adjust her sundial again. And she sees Riker, and so she puts the bow shooting guy onto Riker's case. And so there's kind of like a running around in the hills chase scene where Riker is trying to get away from this guy while he's carrying this man over his shoulders. And the guy keeps...
It doesn't look easy.
Trying to line up a bow and arrow and not getting a great angle on it.
I love that their idea of an Iron Age bow is clearly like a modern carbon bow, but wrapped in bacon.
Yeah, they definitely went down to like Modell's and got like the dopest bow and arrow. Like somebody in the prop department was like, I kind of want to like get into archery, so I'm going to buy the dopest bow we can afford on this budget, and then after we're done shooting this, I'm just going to take that shit home, and I'm going to have a really nice bow.
Super dope bow.
There's just some hemp rope wrapped around.
Yeah, just loosely draped.
Yeah, so Riker manages to lose this guy and get beamed back up, but then they know that Troi is up to no good and is not who she claims to be, so... They take her hostage, and the talk is starting to be of like, why don't we think about maybe sacrificing Troi to Picard, because she is clearly like done the opposite of what Picard wants.
Why is the first thing people want to do when they're a weird religious zealot is kill people in the name of their god?
Oh man,
that's like the first thing that they jump to. And this is a fairly new interpretation of a religion for these people on the planet.
Right.
And that guy gets there in like an hour.
Yeah. I don't know if we said this before, but like the deal with these people is that they like walked away from religion and superstition a long time ago. And they are growing up rational. Like they have science and reason and logic
in a pretty Vulcan way.
They're very precocious in that way. Yeah. Yeah. So it's a sticky wicket that they're starting to be fully radicalized religious zealots.
But the snowball gets more powder at this point, because now Troi's a hostage.
Right. And so Picard is like, fuck this. Like, I'm going to talk to their leader. Like, let's beam their leader up. And so their leader is this woman, Nuria, who, you know, has been mostly trying to talk Leeko down from some of the more insane things that he suggests, but is pretty much believing what Leeko is saying, because she's seen evidence that has satisfied her for whatever reason. And so they get Troi to kind of let them know when Nuria is alone, and they beam her up to the ship. And so like Picard goes down to the transporter bay to do this himself. He like tells Chief O'Brien to take a smoke break, and
yet another like 10-second O'Brien scene in a Next Generation episode. Like he is the master of that.
Yeah, he didn't even get a line this time. He definitely got scale for this scene. They were just like, Colm, why don't you come down? We're not going to pay you like a featured role rate, but you can get like $250 if you want to come down today and be the transporter guy.
He kind of has the best job.
Yeah. Very low stakes.
He got a new uniform too. Like, he's not just one of those assholes in the old spandex.
Yeah. Yeah. His pips move up to the collar.
The Mandarin collar.
Yeah.
He just kept talking in one long, incredibly unbroken sentence, moving from topic to topic so that no one had the chance to interrupt. It was really quite hypnotic.
This is a scene where I felt like it was a real missed opportunity, and if I had been directing this episode, here's how it would have gone down. Picard would have slid his hand up the transporter control, beaming Nuria up, and she would have beamed up in full squat with her dress bunched up around her waist, because what would she be going to do by herself other than take a poo?
Oh, jeez. That went to a place a couple of times that I wasn't expecting. Man, you really crossed me over on that one.
I thought I'd lay a little poo trap for you. She immediately takes a knee because he introduces himself as Picard, and that is enough for her to realize that she is in the glorious and divine presence of her maker.
Mm-hmm.
And he basically spends like a quarter of the episode walking her around, trying to talk her out of her now newly deeply held religious conviction.
And this is a thing that he's done before with chicks. He grabs them from their planet, brings them up to the ship, and then shows them what their planet looks like from above. This is a thing that's happened many times.
Yeah, and it's not the last time it'll happen either.
No. It's sort of his move, right?
Yeah.
Like Wesley's chocolate. Picard's got a big window.
Yeah. So I sort of questioned whether his taking her to see the planet from the window was the right move for her, because, I mean, this is like, he's trying to talk her into, I'm not a magical being, I just have sufficiently advanced technology. But he basically shows her the most amazing thing that he could, right? Like, I guess he doesn't replicate something or whatever, but he goes and shows her planet from a stupendous altitude, and like I feel like that is a major backstep in him.
Yeah, that kind of undermines his point, right?
Unconvincing her of his divinity.
Yeah. If God creatures are mostly depicted as, you know, those who exist above,
yeah,
the people they rule, then that was kind of a misstep.
Yeah, but so he talks her through, like, you know, if an even more cavey cave person met you, what would they think of the fact that you know how to build a hut and make a bow? And he basically introduces her to the idea of abstract thought, and
he tries to lawyer her a little bit.
He tries to lawyer her, but like he kind of introduces her to a way of thinking,
yeah,
even. And yeah. I thought that was an interest. I mean, I don't know what else they would have done, but an interesting choice on the writer's part, because the idea that they're extremely rational but also sort of need to be introduced to abstraction as a thought process,
mm-hmm,
seemed a little bit at odds.
Yeah.
But eventually, like, she's like starting to talk the way he wants her to talk, but then she asks him, hey, why don't you do us a favor and bring back some of the people that have died? And he's like, fuck. like I really thought I had you, and it is clear that I'm not gone far enough. So he takes her down to sick bay, where conveniently one of the researchers that they beamed up is shuffling loose this mortal coil. And that really like drives the point home for her that they're not all powerful, they are just more powerful than her.
Hey, that might be a good time to play a commercial.
Okay, Adam, if we're going to do something very abrupt, let's do it.
When I was growing up, I didn't have anyone to tell me about personal grooming. I had to learn these things on my own. So I'm here to save you some embarrassment and recommend the grooming tools that I use, the products from Manscaped. Now, this is a company that constantly has its mind on your bush. Imagine the meetings they have. Imagine the pictures they have in their PowerPoint presentations. Now imagine your junk looking its best thanks to the Lawnmower 5.0. This thing is the latest Bonch trimming technology with two interchangeable heads, a standard one for taking just a little off the top, and a new foil blade to go smooth wherever your heart desires. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVES at manscaped.com. That's 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVES at manscaped.com. Nothing like a little spring cleaning in your pants.
Are you looking for the perfect gift to celebrate the moms in your life? Aura frames are beautiful Wi-Fi connected digital picture frames that allow you to share and display unlimited photos. Every mom I have ever given an Aura frame to has absolutely loved it, and that includes a lot of moms I know. This is a gift that I have personally given many, many times, and it's great. I can upload photos from my phone the moment I take them, and that means that mom or grandma out there is going to get pictures of their loved ones delivered to their living room. And right now, Aura is having a great sale for Mother's Day. Listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting auraframes.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. That's auraframes.com, and use the code SCARVES at checkout to show your support for our show. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, when you listen to podcasts, it really just comes down to whether or not you like the sound of everyone's voices. My voice is one of the sounds you'll hear on the podcast Dr. Game Show, and this is the voice of co-host and fearless leader Joe Firestone.
This is a podcast where we play games submitted by listeners, and we play them with callers over Zoom we've never spoken to in our lives. So that is basically the concept of the show. Pretty chill.
So take it or leave it, bucko. And here's what some of the listeners have to say.
It's funny, wholesome, and it never fails to make me smile.
I just started listening and I'm already binging it. I haven't laughed this hard in ages. I wish I'd discovered it sooner.
You can find Dr. Game Show on MaximumFun.org.
Video games can make you laugh.
They can make you cry.
They can even make you sing.
We're the hosts of Triple Click.
It's a podcast about video games.
This is an exciting time for new games, from Diablo to Final Fantasy.
From Starfield to Street Fighter.
From Zelda to... oh, who are we kidding? We're just going to talk about Zelda.
Whether you play games or you just like hearing about them, we've got you covered.
Find us at MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts. Bye.
Oh boy, wasn't that a great commercial, Ben?
I loved hearing that commercial. So the next thing that happens is Picard and Nuria beam down with the project of not letting Leeko assassinate Troi, and also helping the whole tribe understand that he's not God. And it gets to a point where Leeko is so pissed that Picard keeps insisting he's not God that Leeko grabs the bow and...
the bacon bow?
Yeah, and draws it pointed at Picard. And Picard basically challenges him to shoot him. And he challenges him with the confidence of a man who knows that Dr. Crusher is but a transporter beam away.
Right, like, right.
Like, he's like, probably this can't kill me.
Where does the arrow have to go for that not to be true, though? Like, if arrow goes right through his eye and into his brain, that could kill him, right?
I feel like even that, they could, like, transport or reconstruct.
Man.
I don't know.
And he's got that metal heart, too. Like, it would probably just bounce off the metal heart.
Yeah.
That would probably prove Leeko's point. If he heart shots him and it just bounces off. Talk about your all-time backfires.
Absolutely. But Leeko draws and is about to hit him, and his daughter freaks out at the last minute and bumps him. So the arrow just goes into Picard's shoulder. And when Nuria stoops to try and help him, she holds up her hand and it's covered in Picard blood. And that is like Leeko's losing his faith moment.
Yeah, because gods don't bleed, right?
Only women bleed, Adam.
Only women bleed.
Oh. You were just mentioning how the Doctor is only a transporter away from fixing Picard. Do you think the sling that Picard returns to the planet wearing is just a showpiece, and that his arm is fine? Because if he returned all good, that might kneecap his point about not being a god. He sort of has to look a little wounded, right?
Yeah, we've definitely seen the Doctor like use some dermal regenerators where like somebody has a flesh wound and then they don't. So I think you might be right about that. I mean, that's headcanon, but I think you're probably on the right track.
You know, if you want headcanon, it's probably a good idea to give headcanon first, right?
Yeah. Yeah. It comes as a standard part of the package. So this last scene where Picard's arm is in the sling is like him with the chair turned around backwards, kind of real talk for teens.
Guidance counseling them.
Situation where they're going like, so you were just like us before you were you. And he's like, exactly. They're pretty cool about accepting the fact that they had their privacy violated for a long period of time without their knowledge. And they're so cool about it that they give Picard a nice piece of woven goods to take home as a souvenir of his time on planet Mintaka.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a real nice gift.
Yeah.
It's sort of a remember us with this tapestry sort of gift. And Picard's like, there's no way I'm forgetting you guys. And he sort of pats his arm like... Mm-hmm. Like in a real fuck you kind of way. This scar will be an enduring memory.
Yeah. Well,
you see that tapestry all the time in future episodes. Like, yeah, that thing sticks around.
That's one thing I like about the show. Like when a character has like a kind of a character building episode that results in a piece of props, like they don't forget about it, you know?
Yeah, props to props.
Even though the episodes tend to be total monster of the week type deals, like there are little bits of continuity that go through the show. And I like that.
Yeah, me too. It rewards a careful viewing.
My love is a fever, long in jail for that, which longer nurses the disease.
Hey, Ben.
What's that, Adam?
Did you find yourself a drunk Shimoda this episode?
Drunk Shimoda!
My drunk Shimoda is the chief anthropologist. I can't even remember the guy's name, but just so forceful in his argument that they just got to leave some Ten Commandments and get the hell out of there. It's like the opposite of what he should represent as a scientist. Like, he's there under the aegis of the Prime Directive, studying an untouched culture to, like, better understand human and Vulcan culture as they developed. And he's like, we gotta totally despoil their culture and get the fuck out of here.
He joins a really growing club of shitty scientists depicted on this show.
Yeah, like, every time a science man gets gray hair in this show, he just winds up being such a prick.
Terrible science man.
Yeah. What about you?
My Shimoda goes to none other than the Picard. Because the choice to beam Nuria to the ship may have offered, like, only a handful of opportunities to convince her that Picard is not a god, while at the same time, like, if she walks through that ship with her eyes open at all, like, every corner of that ship is magic, from the doors to the food replicators to the weird aliens, right, to anything that she sees on that ship is equivalent to godlike, according to her, like, according to her level of intelligence. And
right, like, he takes calls on his communicator in this,
yeah,
in front of her,
and yeah,
like that was conceivable in the 80s, right?
Yeah,
and that's possible now. Like, we could make a thing that is the size of a communicator that can send and receive radio signals and, yeah, make little sounds, but it wasn't buildable in the 80s. Like, you couldn't make that,
yeah,
then. And even 40 years before that, it was a completely insane science fiction idea, right?
Right.
It's fucking mental that she is able to be convinced.
Yeah, Picard totally goes rogue on this idea. And Picard's like, hey, Nuria, you want to go watch someone die with me? So they go into Six Bay, and sure, they watch someone die, but there's also 1,000 other things in that room that indicate their godlike abilities that if she took a look around would totally dispel the idea of anyone dying in front of her at all. Like,
yeah,
that idea was just crazy, and it should have backfired big time, and it momentarily did.
Yeah, I feel like he should have gone to the planet's surface and not brought her to him.
Yeah, I agree. But at that point, like, the issue was just a Katamari Damacy of fucked up choices that led to that moment, right?
Yeah, there's no way other way to put it.
There are much better ways to put it. That was my way. What's coming up next time?
The next episode of the show is Season 3, Episode 5, The Bonding. When the ship's archaeologist is killed on a mission led by Worf, the Klingon feels responsible for the son she left behind. Do you remember this episode at all?
Who are they referring to as the Klingon? That seems like a very unnecessary the boy moment,
yeah,
in the story there.
Yeah.
Is this the one where the boy slicks back his hair and tries to become like Data?
I think that's a different one. I feel like there are 3 episodes that are like this. There's one where it's like a kid that was...
The Slickback Trilogy is what you're talking about.
Yeah, there's a total Slickback Trilogy. Like, there's a boy that wants to be like Data. There's a boy that he won't take his gloves off because touching an alien is unclean, but he's a human who is, like, orphaned.
Huh.
And then there's one where Worf keeps, like, trying to get the boy to do, like, a Klingon ceremony with them, and they're like, no, that is not cool.
God, you know, if it's anything like the bar mitzvah, I don't think that kid can hang.
Yeah. It makes me realize that this show is just fucking lousy with orphans. Like, you've got your Wesley, you've got your Worf, kind of got your Data.
Yeah.
Kind of got your Riker. Like, they're goddamn
it's a ship
orphans,
of orphans
coming out of the bulkheads.
Yeah. Hmm. Really makes you think.
What's that about? No shade to orphans. I'm just saying, like, more than average, right?
Right.
Like, in any cast of eight people, how many orphans should you normally have? Four?
Here's the idea, guys. We make them all orphans, but we underwrite the women entirely. Like, it's just moody chocolate lovers. Those are the women on the show. When we can't kill them, they're just bitching about chocolate. Well, hopefully the current writer's room is taking a better crack at things than this one.
Yeah, I guess we'll never know.
Yeah, well, if you'd like to discuss this episode, the Slickback Trilogy, and any other episode of the show, feel free to reach out to us on Twitter using the hashtag GreatestGen. I'm on there as @CutForTime, and Ben is there as @BenjaminR, AHR.
We're on the Maximum Fun Reddit and the Greatest Gen Reddit. One thing I'd love to request of our listeners, if you're inclined to shoot the breeze on Reddit at all, I would love to see people go and leave a comment on the Maximum Fun Reddit, because we usually get like one or two comments there, and I feel like it'd be fun if like people were getting engaged there, because I think that other Max Fun listeners would see that we're a very lively community and maybe get on board, you know?
If Greatest Gen listeners actually started commenting on the Maximum Fun board, it's like a biker gang showing up to a church mixer. Like,
I'm trying to talk on the phone!
Yeah, like, tables are going to get flipped over, feelings are going to get hurt. It's going to be fun. I'd like to see that.
Yeah, it would be good, I think. Or, if not good, amusing.
Yeah.
We're also on Facebook. There's a Facebook page and a Facebook group. Those should both be pretty easy to find. And I think if you can find one, you can probably find the other.
Yeah, and look, the only reason our show is here is through the generous support of our listeners. So if you feel like being one of those, go to MaximumFun.org/donate.
Yeah. You should also just check out all the great shows on Maximum Fun. We can't recommend this network highly enough. Just a bunch of like really like wonderful, good-hearted people that are making really funny and thoughtful shows on all types of different subjects.
Has Pam Adlin been on Bullseye? I bet she'd be great.
I bet she has.
Yeah, I'm going to have to go back into the back episodes of that show. That's one of my favorites, and I bet she'd be great on it.
Yeah, Bullseye is...
Louis C.K. was on it recently.
Yeah.
Speaking of people who have been on Louis.
And, yeah, they're best buds.
Yeah.
She's like, co-written a lot of that show at this point, right?
She is great.
She's top tier.
Yep.
We should thank Dark Materia for our music and everybody that creates, like, cool fan art and whatnot. Still enjoying the hell out of the Bill Tilly trading card collection.
Oh, man. The holo cards that he's coming out with are especially good.
Oh, the best. Well, with that, we will be back at you next time. Great episode of Star Trek The Next Generation, and unfortunately this as well.
Yep. Slick back.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture. Artist owned.
Listener support.
Slip back with my mind and my scarves and my scarves on my mind.
You're going to have to decide whether to keep that.